Hello, and we're back again. Welcome to Scots Language Radio. I'm Freda Monison, and this is the programme that likes to ging for other programmes, maybe just canna go. And a programme that celebrates athing to do with the Scots language. In this edition, the new Scots Scriver Post, The Hopes and the Fears. We hear from Jenny Niven, Hido Languages at Creative Scotland. And we hearken back to the time when we had other Scrivers in Scotland. We howk about in the kale yard. And Thanute fae Derek McClure, that is meant by the Kailyard style of writing. And we hear about a song project in Aberdeenshire that's encouraging Scots in the classroom, and we'll hear the bairns singing in a. Now, last episode, we had news of a spleet new plan and policy fae Creative Scotland to promote and develop the Scots language across a' the airts. It was announced in Edinburgh at the National Library of Scotland. And a key element to the policy is the creation of the role of the Scots Scriver. It's a 2-year appointment, a joint initiative between the Library and Creative Scotland. A first for Scotland, the purpose is to produce works in Scots across any of the art forms. Jenny Niven is Head of Literature, Publishing and Languages at Creative Scotland, and she introduced the post at the launch. So I asked Jenny about her hopes for the new Scriver post.
I hope that by the end of 2 years, we've done a few different things. One would be to really have changed the status of Scots for as many people as possible. I know that's a big aim.
A big ask.
It is. But as many people as possible. I mean, maybe that's a handful of people who've really fundamentally changed their attitude to it, are more confident using it, have discovered new words, have seen the National Library as a resource where you can really explore all this rich heritage that we've got sitting behind us linguistically. But also, I think, and this ties more directly into the Scots Lead policy that we're launching for Creative Scotland today, one of our roles is to really begin to change the way that we work with the organisations that we support and represent in their confidence in working creatively in Scots.
Okay, but there's a question, but either way about fits your fears. That the gigs near why?
Well, perhaps, I mean, I think that the project of Scots, if you want to put it that way, has for a very long time been championed by a small number of very committed people who've been working on this for years, like yourself, Rita, and lots of people within what could be known as the Scots language community, which is quite, in some ways, hasn't... it's a bit separate from the millions of people, 1.5 million people in the last census, who say they speak Scots on a daily basis. And I think a negative outcome from the project would be if that if we didn't help in some way to bridge those two groups and to broaden out the project of Scots.
I was
more.
Just wondering, how could you measure success? Again, that's a difficult thing, but would it be, and I know we've said this a minute again, would it be that the door to the mere, established broadcasting network, would the door be opened more than it is now? Would that be a measure of success?
That would be fabulous. That would be a measure of success.
How do we do that?
Well, the BBC have said that they will come along and talk to our steering group from the Scriver Post. They'll come and speak to us about programming opportunities. There might be opportunities for the Scriver to...
Is this just BBC Alba?
No, BBC Scotland. Well, BBC Scotland. But what's the head of policy I spoke to there, actually? So
hope is there.
So you never know. But we'll also talk to our contacts through other bits of the media, regional telly and things as well.
STV, of course.
But the other thing, I think, is through education. And we've been working quite closely with the team of Scots Language Coordinators at Education Scotland. Scotland, as we deliver this project, they're sitting on the steering group. Donald Smith from Trax is on the steering group, and so they'll be working hard to push the opportunity created by the Scriver and by this
Hans
policy.
And
of course, Michael Hans from the Scots Language Centre, and they'll push this through their extensive networks too. And I think the visibility for it should be quite high, and it's a really exciting opportunity for a Scriver, to spend 2 years digging around in this amazing archive here. Well, the staff here have have offered to, you know, open the doors basically and really help them to find what they can. And the really interesting thing about Scots in the past, I think, is that there's all these very rich lexicons that have been used in architecture and in planning and in the legal system.
Archaeology, the Dig It project that's going on in 2015.
All kinds of stuff that I think that will be able to describe how Scots can be used in all kinds of different situations and settings. And it's not just a colloquial language, but it's something that's actually come through in all sorts of levels in our culture for hundreds of years. And I think the library archive is a really good way to showcase that.
Jenny Niven, Head of Literature, Publishing and Languages at Creative Scotland. And this is a good time to introduce my studio companion, Steve Byrne. Steve, good to hear from you, Jenny. Hopes and fears, and the emphasis again is on confidence, isn't it?
Absolutely. It's brad to hear that they're getting into it with their een open, I suppose you could say, in terms of folk, accepting that there's still a need to build the confidence of folks.
We were saying just, I've sent it to somebody that put this in context. Every single week, I think somebody says, oh, you're doing Scots Language Radio, great, because I was, you know, punished in school for speaking Scots. Whew, heavy stuff to cheer us up. Here's Fred Morrison from his album Outlands. This is The Wildcat.
Thank you.
blah blah, the physics out of your lugs. That was Fred Morrison with The Wildcat. Right, moving on, the Scots word scriver means to most folk, of course, a writer. Though we heard there it's nae necessarily going to be a writer appointed to the post. See if that comes for it. But of course, Scotland is full of treasures. We have rich heritage of Scots literature. In this programme, we're going to find out about Fitz came to be called the Kailyard School and style of writing. And to put us in the mood, a song for James Malcolm, the Bonnie Briar Bush, Steve Fitwire will play in a song, apart from the fact James is enough a good singer and it's enough a good song.
Well, it's a song for the tradition, I suppose you could say. Versions wrote by Burns and Lady Nairn. Even broadsides about card Bonnie Briar Bush came about in the late 1800s. And it's one of these songs that's kind of pastoral. I'll just read you a very short bit of the lyric. It's, "There grows a bonny briar bush in oor Kailyard, and sweet are the blossoms on it in oor Kailyard. And I hint that bonny briar bush, as a lass and lad were heard, busy, busy courting in oor Kailyard." So you can kind of get the feeling about that sort of sentimental, kind of countrified way of doing, and we'll speak a bit more about that. But with reference to the actual literary use of it, or the kind of terminology as to how it's become Cad Kailyard, is this: a couple of lines for the song were used in a book called Beside the Bonnie Briar Bush as the epigraph, the novel by Ian McLaren in 1895.
So that's where the word Kailyard comes from. Right. As the school of Kailyard, or the Kailyard School, should I say. This is Jim Malkin singing the Bonnie Briar Bush.
There grows a bonnie briar bush in our Kailyard. There grows a bonnie briar bush in our Kailyard. And below the bonny briar bush there's a lassie and a lad, and they're busy, busy cootin' in our Kailyard. We'll cut the mare below the bus in our Kailyard. We'll cut the mare below the bus in our Kailyard. We'll a watty Athel's green, and there will no be seen, while the trees and the branches will be our safeguard. Will you gang to the dancing in Carlisle Ha? Will you gang to the dancing in Carlisle Ha? Where Sandy and Nancy, I'm sure, will ding the ma. I winna gang to the dancing in Carlisle Ha. What will you do for a lad when Sandy gangs awa'? What will you do for a lad when Sandy gangs awa'? I'll awa'ty Edinburgh and win a penny fee, and see you nonny bonny lad'll fancy me.
Jim Malcolm there with the Bonnie Briar Bush. The phrases we heard that gave it rise to the Kailyard School of Writing. But what is meant by that title and that style? A question I put to honorary senior lecturer at the University of Aberdeen, Derek McClure.
We'll Kailyard this cabbage patch, Gairden. There grows a bonny briar bush in oor Kailyard, and white are the blossoms o't in oor Kailyard. It's a wee poem, I don't care what it's by, but the Kailyard School was a period in the history of Scots literature that was introspective, inward-looking, nostalgic, romantic, sentimental, all about our ain wee Kailyard, our ain cabbage patch, as if this was all that Scots could be about, as if speaking in Scots or writing in Scots, you just had to write about, and the wee, your ain wee garden, your ain wee garden, your ain wee cabbage patch, and that there was nae reference in Scots literature in of the time to industry, to the big industrial developments, to the Industrial Revolution,
the
social change, to the real world. It was all backward looking and sort of.
So what time was this about?
The 19th century, you had the things like Barry, J.M. Barry, knew, he's a great writer. His book, A Window in Thrums, though, it's very sort of sentimental. The people in Thrums, which is Kirriemuir, they speak beautiful, fluent Scots, but they just blether about what's coming to see the minister. They blether about their own families, their own life. They're as if there was nothing outside the wee village of Thrums. And it's, you get the impression that it's, there's no need for intellectual exercise, there's no need for social awareness, there's nothing to be worried about because nothing changes. It's all the same as it just was in your granny's day, and that's all it ever needs to be.
So then there was a change, though, around about the beginning of the 20th century.
Mm-hmm.
So far changed it. Was it, did they come out of the heat of Hugh McDermott?
It didn't come straight out of the heat of Hugh McDermott. There had been other writers. Now, Robert Louis Stevenson took the idea that Scots was dying. Few spak it then and knew there's nain, my wee bit sangs like other lane, their sense that yince was braw and plain, tint altogether, like runes upon a stone and stain among the heather, and that since Scots is gain or is dean, nobody speaks it, and say he was at liberty, he thought, or he said, to just tack his Scots words wherever he could find them. I write my Scots, if I found a Scots word, I used it, not caring if it hailed from Angus or from the Merns, from Lauderdale or the Borders. He just took his Scots words. He wasn't concerned to write an accurate representation of a Scots that anybody actually spoke, or so he said. And Stevenson, he wasn't careless. He was a very, very careful, very conscientious, very highly sophisticated craftsman. He kent exactly what he was doing. He was taking other the fine expressive words of the Scots language and using them, no being concerned to write as anybody actually spoke, but using it for poetry, extending his great poetic skill, great poetic talent in Scots, using the whole range of the Scots words.
But the Scots language, I had a tenuous relationship with the Scottish identification, didn't it?
Well, you could be, you'd, the idea that Scots was the language of the Scottish people, the language of the Scots, this took a long time to develop. In the Middle Ages, you had a great literature. In the time of the Stuarts, the time of James I, II, III, IV, V, you had Scots being used for some of the greatest poetry ever written.
Gavin Douglas in
1513, Robert Henderson, William Dunbar, John Barber writing his epic on Robert Bruce, Blind Harry writing his epic on William Wallace. You had some superb poetry, some of the greatest poetry being written in Europe at the time, and it was in Scots, but it took a long time before they thought to call it Scots. It was Gavin Douglas in 1513 finished a translation of Virgil's Aeneid. You could see that as maybe the greatest poem ever written, the greatest thing in the Scots language.
It was featured on this very programme. Okay, but that may, it could be said that that's just a hobby for academics and men of letters, to quote your own self earlier on. But what relevance has it got now to folk and out with the academic world? What relevance has it got to folk that has got no interest in literature?
For them, it's the community language. They still meet, they still speak it, they still converse in it. It is the way they speak. I mean, you're asking what's the importance of folks' native language? Their native language is part of their identity. It's the same in other countries in Europe. There's the small dialects. Italy, there's standard literary Italian, which is based on the dialect of Florence, but you've also got literally hundreds of small languages and dialects. Some of them are no small. Neapolitan's a big language, but there are languages and dialects, some of them are just a few hundreds or a few tens of speakers, and they're proud of them. They keep them going. They keep speaking. They teach them to their wains. They teach them to the kids and the skills. It's taken for granted there that if you speak a dialect or if you speak a language or a form other than the standard language, it's good to hear. It's part of your identity, part of your own individual, your communal identity, your identity as a member of a community, a local community, and folk take pride in it. Why do we not take the same pride in Scotland?
It's pride.
Aye, exactly.
Derek McClure, honorary senior lecturer at the University of Aberdeen. A lot to think about there, Steve, indeed. Now, thoughts, had the thought, we're going to be listening to a recording of Hugh McDermott reading Inouye's poems in a minute, but first we'll go back to a bit of music. Now, we've gone through solstice and the longest day, It's a phrase that comes round ah too quick, especially this blinking year. Well, blinky days. That's a lovely phrase, blinky days. Blink a sun. It's a we've hid. So in keeping with that theme, the next are fair there, and then Steve, this is your chosen track for this month. What is it?
I'm half sorry to bring this theme in, you came in barely out of the solstice. It's a brand new band, an act called Clipe, which is a brass Scots name for a band. Half a Bonnie Music, and well, there's a singer on this track called Jenny Sturgeon who's written and sung this, but the main protagonist is a chap called Simon Gall, and there's also a fiddle player called Johnny Hardy that folk might ken for.
Ken about him?
For Erts and Perts. Right. So, hi, this is Fair Drannan, Half a Bonnie Music.
Sets on the hills of home, the nights are fair drawn in now. The leaves are turning, turning o'er, and like the swifts, they're gone now. A young lass walks along the shore, free from men. Plants her feet firm in the sand, like roots along the tide line. The sun sets on the hills of home, the nights are fair drawn in now. The leaves are turning, turning o'er, and like the swift they're gone now. The minutes pass and turn to hours, the weeks condense to years now. To box these dreams and memories, we surely set them. Sunsets on the hills of home, the nights are fair drawn in now. The leaves are turning, turning o'er, and like the swifts they're gone
Drawn in for Clipe, Johnny Hardy, Simon Gall and Jenny Sturgeon. Beautiful. Now, as we promised, Steve, a special recording of A Drunk Man Looks at the Thistle. You want to say anything about this before we go into this?
Aye, in the 1970s, an odd thing happened in a way, if you look back at it now. Cladda Records in Dublin got half involved in recording a lot of the Scottish poets. McDermott was one, George Mackay Brown was another, Hamish Henderson another, partly with support for the Scottish Arts Council and Trevor Royle. But aye, this is a double LP that I've got, Gethin Dust
and
Mouse.
I've got the same, in fact.
Big, huge picture of McDermott on the back of it. And just reading his own response in some ways to Caillardism, and as he says himself in this extract, of lamenting how Dunbar, that we touched on in terms of the Machars being flung out of the Caillard Wa. So interesting to hear it for the voice of the man himself.
Here's Hugh McDermott.
Dear Burns, was booky like a shot kail blaws. Will this rough sight no gie the orchids pause? The gardens o' the muses may be braw, but nane like oors can bringe and eat and aw. And o'er the kail-yeard wa' Dunbar the flung, and o' their countrymen that e'er he sung, for ither than ploughman's lugs or to enrichen, plots on Parnassus set apart for kitchen. Ploughman and ploughman's wives, shades o' the manse may will be at the heed o' sic a dance, as through the polished haws o' Europe leads the rout o' bagpipes, haggis, and sheep's heads. The Vandal Scot, through Branksome's deadly barrow, I struggle yet to free a winsome marrow, to show what Scotland might have had instead of this preposterous Presbyterian breed. Gin Glasgow folk are tired o' hangler, and still need breeding circuses their spangler. Or gin you should need mair than ane to teach ye, then learn frae Dostoevsky and frae Nietzsche. And let the lesson be to be yourselves. Ye needna fash gin it's to be oaked else, to be yourselves, and to mak that worth being, nae harder job to mortals has been gin.
To be yourselves.
That's it, I thought you would like that.
Aye. We had that phrase, wasn't it, with Mary Blanche in Shetland just last week.
Aye, what's the thing?
To be yourselves.
Comes up all the time.
Aye. Hugh McDermott, where a drunk man looks at a thistle. Well, it's a turn of the next generation now. You're about to hear about a song project that introduced bairns in some of the primary schools in Aberdeenshire to traditional North East songs and the Scots language. The project was supported by Aberdeenshire Council and Creative Scotland. And this is the pupils of Keeg Primary School, Gian at Waldy, with Katie Birdie, Had a Coo.
Katie Birdie had a coo, black and white and with the moon. Whistle at a dainty hue, dance Katie Birdie. Katie Birdie had a hen, she could play with what and then. Whistle at a dainty hen, dance Katie Birdie. Katie Birdie had a cat, she could play with the goose and rat. Whistle at a dainty cat, dance Katie Birdie. Katie Birdie had a cat, I have been the angels at. She was sleeping at goose and rat, dance Katie Birdie. Oh, the cat he win the kettle and the dog he win the pot, and the owl wife win the keeper's heart, sleeves up, and the lion win the bird, and the fish he win the pot, and the black cat fiddled in the white cat's side.
We came for Hugh McDermott in the Doer voice saying what he was saying to Katie Birdie at a coon, King Primary School.
Bruh.
Just giving it all day, rocking Katie Birdie. And they didn't hug back, Steve, did they?
Indeed. Oh, that was brilliant.
Good. That was a pair to a project that I had the privilege of being involved in, along with talented teachers, music specialist Sharon Hassan and drama specialist Margaret Hearn. We introduced the bands to some of the North East songs for the Greg Duncan Folk Song Collection, put together in a special book for bairns by Tom Spears, CAD, When I Was Young. It was featured in this programme a few months ago, in fact. Now, we dramatised each of the songs, and this gave the teacher and the pupils a chance to get to ken some of the Scots or Doric words that were in the songs, and maybe a bit of mair, and put them in context of a script. In Rain North and Money Musk, we dramatised that song, Katie Birdie Had a Coo, but she'd rather hear an iPad.
That was, well, wouldn't it? Well, days, I mean,
it was a 21st century twist in the song, and it really worked a treat. It was just grand, because Katy Perry, well, the Beast that took Katy Perry to court, because they didn't want to be sell to shit, to sell a Beast by the iPad. Anyway, on with the story. Jackie Ross is acting deputy Heidi at Afford Primary, and she accompanied us through the song sessions and the project in her school. Well, in an interview, for I have to explain for reasons I'll hear in a minty, was Dean out the back at Jackie's stead and at her firm. Jackie told me why she thinks, from her point of view, Scots is important in the classroom.
Well, for me personally, it's awfa important because it is my mother tongue and I grew up speaking the Doric. We're local Scots. And, you know, I come through as a learning support teacher, and working in this area quite often, Ken Wee Burns, that spoke a Doric, and I felt that you made a bit of a connection if you could speak their mother tongue and give them a bit of a boost. Because sometimes learning English was a different language for them, and it was a bit tricky. So I have that personal, well, and it's my culture, and it's my background, it's my roots. So I think it's awfa important.
So you let them hear if it sounds like them. Aye,
and although there's nae so many bairns knew that speak a Doric, there are still plenty of the loons and quines that do. And as a lot of the bairns enjoy taking part in the activities that we do at Afford, Runa Buta Doric. And we've done various things, Ken, just to keep it going and to celebrate. Obviously, in Afford, we've got Charles Murray.
Charles Murray.
Aye. Aye.
We were speaking about him just near the programme, about, you know, the fussle.
Oh, now that is... Oh, right? You can... well, Puckles, our P4s will be able to tell you the fussle. Nay, bother.
Can they recite it?
They can recite it. A lot of them can recite the hell lot. And even more of them can do the first two or three verses.
Charles Murray, of course, was born...
He was born and educated in Afford. And there's an annual concert, the Hamworth Concert that we do elke year.
We're just assuming nobody cares for Charles. Well, he is famous poet.
Very famous poet. You're quite right. For the for the Northeast, he got away to South Africa, and he was an engineer. Right. Yes, an important man in South Africa. Got lots of honours there and back in Aberdeen. I think Aberdeen University gave him an honorary degree.
Came back and retired.
He did. He retired and lived in Bankry, although he is buried in Afford. Mm-hmm. And he gifted Murray Park to the village. So there's a tangible, you know, bit of grun there that was gifted to the village for the benefit of the Hale community. And it's a gorgeous wee park. And it's just a wild woodland, and folk, you know, really enjoy going walking.
So for the other things have you introduced?
Well, the kind of things, every year we have the Hamworth concert, and so the bairns will learn a Doric poems.
Hamworth
being, of course, the famous book of poems that Charles Murray wrote. Well, it was a poem, and then the book was called Hamworth.
Right.
And so the concert involves all the bairns for local schools, Runa Boot, and offered... tucks part every year, and it's gone from strength to strength. I first started comparing it, oh Michty, about 8-9 years ago, and our Puckle schools took part. Now nearly Elkie school in the Hale cluster, that's 10-11 schools tucks part.
Cool.
And we've got the bairns reciting poetry, still some Charles Murray, but quite a lot of Sheena Blackhall, Les Wheeler, you can mere contemporary folk that maybe come we slightly easier poems for the bairns now.
Now you've just, well, you've just adopted me as your ambassador.
We have.
You did hear a choice in the matter.
We did. We're happy. We're happy to hear you.
So Rita. Far.
So far, aye. So you can't, we'll be looking for jobbies for you today. Now, the project, obviously, that
we've just finished the project together.
Aye. And that was grand. The Youth Music Initiative project, looking at a Greg Duncan collection. That has been a fantastic project. The bairns in P45 that were part of that just had a great time. Fit a blast.
Well, we clarify that we were looking at this book that it was featured, in fact, in Scots Language Radio.
Aye.
Les Wheeler and Tom Spears' book, Cad When I Was Young.
That's
and we
it.
Tina Puckle, the songs out of that.
Uh-huh.
And we tried to do it with the bairns.
Yes.
Great success.
Great success.
Katy Birdie was rocked, I can tell you.
They enjoyed it.
Aye.
They fairly did. And it was right fine at the concert when the song the Man in the Moon. Well, I was singing the Man in the Moon.
Aiken Drum.
When Abdi joined in, and then the parents had to sing their tourney, and that was a good laugh. But no, Johnny Sangster, the song that the acted out, and we did the musical instrumentation to go along with the singing. The Bairns loved it. And the feedback for the rest of the school that went to watch it was, you know, they were asking how well they'd been. And I had one wee P1 who came up and says, Mrs. Ross, we'd write like, well, he did it in English, Frieda, to be honest. But he said, we'd write like to sing some of the songs out of that book. Yes, so we're going to have to get folks singing out of the book.
So I'll take my guitar back. You'll get the,
yes, absolutely.
So
we've got
next,
P1's next, Frieda. Yes, we'll start with P1 and work up. Well, actually, Nursery Albanina. So
the book, so then we introduced it and we dramatised the song and we added it, we kind of created the instrumental and we're going to make a film out of it. So the Hale thing kind of comes round circle and we've just about introduced the 21st century into the Hale presentation of the Scots in the song as well. So I think that's good that they come and enjoyed it.
They enjoyed it, and when I said to P4 or 5, I says, now, Fit, why do you think we were doing this? And without any prompting for me, they said, well, we have to keep a tradition alive.
They said to me,
it was the first thing they said.
No,
I didn't tell him to say that. They said, no, we have to keep a tradition alive. And somebody's, maybe need to stop as a tractor goes by.
No, we're standing at your phone. Just as you do. Is that your husband?
That's my hubby coming in a boot.
Aye. And his digger.
Aye.
He's gone by.
We'll give him a wave. There you go. Some folk have to work for a living.
At least he didn't have flatness, anyway.
Well, that's true.
We're going to hear a few of these sessions, I think. We're standing at the back of your stead and overlooking Mortlach the hell up there.
That's it.
Nae far for your boy.
Nae far.
And afore I finish, you think, Rune the Corner. That's far. Somebody card.
Peter Williamson was brought up. Yes.
We've introduced something new. Peter Williamson. Tell me a wee bit about Peter Williamson.
Well, Peter Williamson was brought up in Hernley, and about the age of 14, he got into Aberdeen.
Name of the firm is Hernley. It was a time of the famine, wasn't it? It was an alpha famine.
It was the 1700s, wasn't it? And he got into Aberdeen, presumably to look for work.
To get some food
and
as
well. And he got kidnapped.
But in a shed, big bar,
doomed
by the docks.
Absolutely.
And
shipped away to America. Now, as far as I can, there would have been a fair load of bairns that got sent away to be slaves in America. And there was also indentured workers as well that paid for their passage by working when they got over there.
Now, I'm going to stop you there because we need to come back to the other tale of Peter Williamson. Because it's nae a great comment on the folk, the good burghers Aberdeen.
No, it's nae.
We'll stop here.
Okay.
And we'll just whet Abdi's appetite to say, what happened to Peter Williamson? But maybe that's something else we have to introduce to the school.
I think so.
Because he came back.
He did.
To Aberdeen.
He did.
And he sued the town council or something.
The
story unwinds.
It does. There's mair to tell.
Mair to tell.
But I have to tell you, because I was off excited when I said, came to the Bairns, said, why were we doing a project? And they says, it's part of our project, because we're learning about farming. And when we did the song, Johnny Sangster, then we learned about the hearst, and we learned about the workers that did the hearst, and who they used to do it. Didn't they have combines back then? So, and I says, right, and is that a good way to learn about things? Oh, yes, said the class. It was a great way to learn. It was great fun. And we learned a lot. And to me, if it could be better.
It says it all. Good fun and you learned a lot.
Aye.
What more could you want in it?
Absolutely.
That wind's getting up.
It is.
Jackie Ross. Well, we'll maybe hear more about the story of Peter Williamson another time. But I think I can safely say we'll hear an awful lot more through Jackie Ross. What a fabulous session that was.
Anybody that thinks you sit up in a garret with the sound effects department I've just got this vision of iPads in the buyer instead of coos.
Well, you see, we just about got flattened. He wasn't going to hang about. He just drove his digger right past me to step out and jump into the Y. Thanks to Jackie for that and for the great time we had. And that book we were using as part of the North East Song Project is Card When I Was Young. It's by Tom Spears and the introduction by Les Wheeler. So this is the Bairns of Afford Primary singing. This time they're singing Aiken Drum. Made a haggis bags.
Right.
It's one of those creative things. You just go along and you mark it up. I think because he was made a Wensleydale at some one point as well.
So.
Right. Steve, before we go, a few bits of Fitzgannon run about.
Well, we're getting into the summer in spite of that song about the next fair drawn in. There's festival season getting into full swing. A whole bunch of things folk could look at. Bairns between 12 and 18 year old, although maybe no like being cad bairns, can get into the Tinto Summer School near Biggar, where they can learn traditional music in South Lanarkshire. The 27th Steenhive Stonehaven Folk Festival is on for the 9th to 12th of July. We guests including All Blind Dogs, who we mentioned.
Johnny Hardy, who we mentioned earlier.
Aye. The Pussies, who we had on the last show. Lavon du Nord for Quebec in Canada. And a brilliant unaccompanied group called The Young Uns for England. And of course the World Paper and Comb Championship, which you have to gang in here a go at as well if you've no experienced it. So that's on. And then we've got the same weekend, if you're doing in the Southwest, the Newton Stewart and Minigaff Traditional and Acoustic Music Festival. And there's the Merchant O'Connor Band for Ireland and Claire Hastings and Robin Stapleton, who we've featured on the show in recent years. And to finish off, where I'm going at the end of July myself, is to the singing weekend at Killarley up at Echt in Aberdeenshire, in memory of Tom and Anne Reid. Uh-huh. And there's a hail host of unaccompanied singers there. Hosted in collaboration with Killarley Farm Park and the Elphinstone Institute. Folk like Francie Devine for Dublin, Henry Douglas for the Borders, Barbara Dimmock, Bella Hardy for England, Billy Jolly for Orkney, and a hail host of other singers. 3 days of brass songs.
Great, and I might even be joining you up at Killarley with my split new camper van. Well, that's it for this episode, and thanks to our soon sorter Richie Werner. At this time of the programme, we gave him a chance to say hello, but we're not going to let him this time because it's just far too dangerous. He gets excited. Richie, are you there?
All right.
Oh, that's enough.
That's plenty.
Plenty. Thanks to our resident Gannaboot Rumler, Steve Byrne, and join us again another time. We finish with a track for Fred Morrison and a track for his album, Outlands. This is The Train Journey North. For me, Freda Morrison. Bye the new.